A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's the kind of practical problem that sneaks up on you. You've got a 50-gallon storage bin, a metal shed, a garage wall you need to mark permanently. Paint markers are too small. Label makers peel off. Enamel paint, the old gold standard, is vanishing from shelves. And you're standing in the paint aisle realizing nobody in a big box store knows what durable sign application even means. The core questions here are: what are sign makers actually using now? Where do you buy it? How do you prep the surface? And what tools do you need to do it right?
This is one of those topics where the gap between what professionals know and what's available to a curious consumer is just enormous, and it's gotten wider in the last decade. So let's start by defining what we're actually talking about here, because paint is a broad category, and the wrong choice will fail within months.
Sometimes within weeks, if you really mess it up.
Or you'll get that delightful thing where the paint looks fine for 6 months, and then one day you walk out and it's peeled off in one continuous sheet like a sunburn.
The paint equivalent of a bad spray tan.
Here's the scope. We're talking about marking surfaces that are too large for handheld label makers. 50-gallon storage totes, garage shelving, outdoor equipment, metal sheds, concrete walls. These aren't delicate art projects. They need to survive sun, rain, temperature swings, abrasion, and whatever chemicals they might encounter. Gasoline drips, cleaning products, road salt.
The historical gold standard for this was enamel paint. Hard, glossy, chemical resistant. Sticks to metal and plastic like nothing else. But walk into a Home Depot and try to find a quart of traditional oil-based enamel. It's getting difficult.
And there's a reason. The short version is VOC regulations. Volatile organic compounds. Traditional oil-based enamels are solvent heavy. As environmental regulations tightened, especially in California with the South Coast Air Quality Management District rules, which tend to set the standard that manufacturers follow nationally, companies reformulated or discontinued products. The EPI's National Volatile Organic Compound Emission Standards for architectural coatings have been ratcheting down since the late 90s, so what you find on shelves now is mostly water-based.
Which is great for your lungs and the atmosphere. Less great for durability on metal.
That's the trade-off. But let me back up and define our terms here, because we're about to throw around words like alkyd and acrylic and people's eyes glaze over. There are really three categories that matter for this conversation. One, acrylic latex. This is your standard water-based house paint, flexible, easy cleanup designed for walls. Not what we want. Two, acrylic enamel. Still water-based, but formulated with hardeners and cross-linking agents that make it much tougher. Think of it as acrylic latex that went to the gym. 3. Alkyd or oil-based enamel. Solvent-based, self-leveling, cures to an extremely hard film. This is the traditional stuff.
When you say cross-linking, what does that actually mean at the level where it matters?
Imagine the paint as a bowl of cooked spaghetti. In a regular acrylic latex, those spaghetti strands just sort of tangle together. They'll hold, but pull hard enough and they slide apart. Cross-linking is like taking those strands and spot welding them at intersections. Now you've got a net, not just a tangle. The paint film becomes one giant molecule, essentially. That's what makes it solvent-resistant and hard.
It's Velcro at the molecular level.
That's actually a really good way to put it. And alkyd resins do this naturally as they cure. They react with oxygen in the air, and those crosslinks form over days or even weeks. The paint keeps getting harder long after it's dry to the touch.
Which is why enamel paint was the standard for sign painters for decades. It's not just paint. It's a chemical reaction that keeps going.
And with that framing in mind, let's get into the chemistry. Why does enamel work so well, and what are the modern alternatives that actually hold up?
Before we name specific products, I want to address the thing Daniel specifically asked about, what type of store? Because I think this is where most people fail before they even start.
Let me be very direct about this. You do not go to a craft store. Michael's, Hobby Lobby, Joanne, they carry artist acrylics, Apple Barrel, folk art, deco art. These are designed for decorative painting on canvas or wood. They have almost no UV stabilizers, no cross-linking hardeners, and the pigment load is low. Put them on an outdoor metal surface and they'll chalk and flake within a season.
They're basically colored glue.
They're colored glue with aspirations. You also don't go to a big box hardware store for advice. Home Depot and Lowe's stock some of the right products. They carry Rust-Oleum Professional, for example. But the staff generally won't know the difference between an industrial enamel and a decorative acrylic. You're on your own in that aisle.
Where do you go?
A dedicated paint store. Sherwin-Williams, Benjamin Moore, PPG Paints, Kelly Moore, if you're on the West Coast. These stores employ people who understand coatings. You walk in and say, I need an industrial enamel for outdoor metal signage, and they know exactly what you mean. They'll ask about your substrate, your exposure conditions, whether you need brush or spray. It's a completely different conversation.
For the truly hardcore?
Sign supply houses. Nasdar Source One, Grimco, Midwest Sign and Screen, or a local screen printing supplier. These are where professional sign painters buy their materials. They carry one-shot lettering enamel, which has been the sign painter's standard since the 1950s. They carry Matthews paint, which is a two-component acrylic polyurethane used in architectural signage. They carry Ronin Bulletin enamel, which is another old-line sign paint brand.
One-shot is still being made?
Still manufactured by Spraylac Corporation. It's an oil-based enamel formulated specifically for brush lettering. It has a longer open time, meaning it stays wet longer, which lets sign painters pull smooth strokes without brush marks. It self-levels beautifully. The pigment load is extremely high, so you get opacity in one or two coats, and it's available in a huge range of colors.
That's the stuff you see on hand-painted storefront windows and vintage trucks.
And it's still available, but you're not going to find it at a hardware store. You order it from a sign supply house or directly from the manufacturer. A 4-ounce can runs around $8 to $12. A pint is $20 to $25. It's not cheap, but a little goes a long way.
What about the other end of the spectrum? The person who doesn't need sign painter grade materials, but wants something better than craft paint.
That's where Rust-Oleum Professional High Performance Enamel comes in. This is an alkyd-based enamel, solvent-based, available in quarts and spray cans. It's formulated for industrial maintenance, machinery, metal surfaces, equipment. It cross-links as it cures, forms a hard solvent-resistant film, and has good UV resistance. A quart runs about $15 to $18. You can find it at Home Depot, but again, better to go to a paint store where someone can advise you on primer compatibility.
If you want water-based for easier cleanup,
Sherwin-Williams Industrial Enamel. This is a water-based acrylic enamel, but don't let water-based fool you. It's formulated with cross-linking technology that gives it durability approaching traditional alkyds. Lower VOCs, soap and water cleanup, and it adheres well to properly prepared plastic and metal. The caveat is that you absolutely need primer on slick surfaces. With an alkyd, you can sometimes get away with skipping primer on metal, not with this.
There's a real hierarchy. At the consumer level, Rust-Oleum Professional Alkyd. At the pro level, One-Shot or Ronin for sign work, Sherwin-Williams Industrial for general durable marking. And then there's a whole tier above that.
Fine Paints of Europe, Eurolux. This is a high solids alkyd paint, over 50% solids by volume, compared to typical consumer paints that are around 30 to 40%. What that means in practice is that more of what you apply stays on the surface after the solvents evaporate. You get a thicker film, better hiding, and a harder finish. It self-levels like glass. It's also expensive, around $40 to $50 a quart, and you generally have to order it or find a specialty retailer.
50% solids. So, half of what you're applying is actual paint film, not solvent that evaporates.
And that's a huge difference. Consumer paints are often 30% solids. That means 70% of what you apply just disappears into the air. With Eurolux, you're getting almost twice the film thickness per coat.
That's the kind of number that makes a difference when you're painting something that's going to sit in the sun for 5 years.
Here's the thing about oil-based versus water-based that most people misunderstand. The assumption is that oil-based is always better. That was true 20 years ago. It's less true now. Modern water-based acrylic enamels have closed the gap significantly. For indoor applications, or for surfaces that don't see heavy abrasion, a good water-based industrial enamel will perform comparably to an alkyd. Where alkyd still wins is on bare metal, high-traffic surfaces, and anywhere you need maximum chemical resistance.
The decision tree is outdoor metal with sun and rain, indoor plastic bins, water-based acrylic enamel is fine, probably water-based with the right primer, and if you're doing actual sign work with lettering, one shot or Ronin, period.
That's the summary, and I want to address a specific misconception here. Not all acrylic paint is the same. The acrylic craft paint you buy at Michael's, Apple Barrel, Folk Art, is an entirely different product from Sherwin-Williams Industrial Enamel. The industrial version contains hardeners, UV stabilizers, and cross-linking agents. The craft version is pigment, suspended in an acrylic polymer emulsion with minimal additives. They share a base chemistry, but the performance is night and day.
Like comparing a golf cart to a truck, because they both have four wheels.
Now let me give you a concrete comparison that I think illustrates the real-world difference. Imagine you've got a metal shed in your backyard. You want to mark it with large lettering, maybe labeling sections, or just putting your house number on it in a visible way. You have two options on the table. Option 1, rust, oleum professional alkyde enamel, applied with proper surface prep. Option 2, a cheap acrylic craft paint from the art store, because it's available in the color you want and it's $3 a bottle.
I know where this is going.
After one winter, freeze-thaw cycles, UV exposure, rain, maybe some road salt if you're near a street, the acrylic has chalked, cracked, and started peeling at the edges. The alkyde looks essentially the same as the day you applied it. Year 2, the acrylic is mostly gone. The alkyd is still there at year 5.
The cost difference was maybe $12.
The expensive part of painting isn't the paint, it's the time. Surface prep, masking, application, cleanup. Do it once with the right materials, or do it again next year.
Let's move to the other half of this equation, which is surface preparation. Daniel mentioned that with paint markers, you use isopropyl alcohol. And he asked, correctly, whether that's sufficient for outdoor surfaces that might have dirt, grease, or oxidation.
It is not. Isopropyl alcohol is great for removing light dust, fingerprints, and some oils from indoor surfaces. For a plastic storage bin that's been sitting in your basement, a wipe with 70 or 90% isopropyl is perfectly adequate before applying a paint marker or even a small painted label. But for outdoor surfaces, you need a real degreaser.
What does real degreaser mean in this context?
This was the standard heavy-duty cleaner for decades. It cuts through grease, dirt, chalked paint, and mildew. It also etches glossy surfaces slightly, which improves paint adhesion. The problem is that phosphates cause algae blooms in waterways, so TSP was banned in many household cleaners starting in the 1990s. What you buy today as TSP substitute is usually sodium metasilicate. It works almost as well, and it's widely available at hardware stores.
The real stuff is gone, but the substitute is fine.
For our purposes, yes. You mix it with warm water, usually about a quarter cup per gallon, and scrub the surface with a stiff brush. Rinse thoroughly and let it dry completely before painting. For really greasy surfaces, crude cooter is another option. It's a water-based degreaser that's less caustic than TSP, but very effective on oil and grease.
What about metals specifically? If you're painting a rusty shed or an old steel cabinet?
Metal requires its own prep sequence. Step 1, remove loose rust with a wire brush or sandpaper, 80 to 120 grit. Step 2, clean with a degreaser to remove any oil or wax. Step 3, apply a rust-inhibiting primer. Rust Oleum makes a specific rusty metal primer that chemically converts any remaining rust and provides a stable base for the top coat. Step 4, 2 coats of your enamel, waiting the recommended recoat time between coats.
If you skip the primer.
On bare metal, the paint may adhere initially, but will eventually fail at the metal paint interface, especially if there's any residual rust. The rust continues to grow under the paint film and pushes it off. Primer is non-negotiable for metal.
What about plastic? Storage bins are usually polyethylene or polypropylene.
These are low surface energy plastics. Paint doesn't want to stick to them. The solution is mechanical adhesion. You sand the surface lightly with 220 grit sandpaper to create microscopic scratches that the paint can grip. Then clean with isopropyl alcohol. For the most difficult plastics, there's a product called Bulldog Adhesion Promoter. It's a clear spray that chemically modifies the plastic surface to accept paint. One light coat before priming makes an enormous difference.
Concrete or masonry?
Clean with a pressure washer or stiff brush and TSP substitute. If the concrete is smooth or sealed, you may need to etch it with muriatic acid. that's a serious chemical, requires gloves and eye protection and good ventilation, or use a concrete etching solution. Then apply a masonry primer before your top coat. Concrete is porous and alkaline, and regular paint will fail if you don't seal it properly.
The surface prep hierarchy is indoor clean plastic, isopropyl is fine. Outdoor plastic, sand plus isopropyl. Painted metal, degreaser, and maybe light sanding. Bare or rusty metal wire brush, sand, degreaser, rust, inhibiting primer. Concrete, deep clean, possibly etch. Masonry primer.
That's the checklist. And I want to emphasize something that professional painters say constantly, surface prep is 80% of the job. You can buy the most expensive paint in the world, and if you apply it to a dirty, glossy, or rusty surface, it will fail. The paint is only as good as the surface it's bonding to.
There's something almost philosophical about that. All the chemistry, all the cross-linking polymers, all the UV stabilizers, and it all comes down to whether you spent 15 minutes with sandpaper and a degreaser.
The unglamorous truth of durable marking. Now that you know what paint to buy and where to get it, let's talk about how to apply it properly, because even the best paint will fail if the surface isn't prepped correctly.
We've covered prep. Let's talk tools. Brushes, rollers, thinners, maintenance.
The applicator matters enormously. For large flat surfaces, storage bins, metal panels, shed walls, my strong recommendation is a 4-inch foam roller. The Wiz brand is the standard. Foam rollers give you a smooth, stipple-free finish that looks almost sprayed. They're inexpensive, disposable, and they don't shed bristles.
The downside being they're disposable.
Yes, but for a small project, the convenience is worth it. You're not cleaning a foam roller. You use it, you toss it.
If you want a reusable option?
For water-based paints, you want a synthetic bristle brush, nylon or nylon polyester blend. Purdy and Worcester are the two brands that professionals reach for. Purdy has been manufacturing brushes in Portland, Oregon since 1925. Their Nylox line is specifically designed for water-based paints. The bristles are tapered and flagged at the tips, which means they hold more paint and release it more smoothly.
Flagged meaning split at the ends?
Like split ends on hair, but intentional and beneficial. It creates more surface area at the tip, which holds paint better and lays it down more evenly.
Intentional split ends. So that's where all my hair's paint-holding capacity went.
Your hair would make a terrible brush, corn. For oil-based paints, you want natural bristle, specifically China bristle, which is hog hair. Natural bristles have a microscopic texture that holds oil-based paint well. Synthetic bristles can become limp or dissolve in strong solvents.
The rule is synthetic for water-based, natural for oil-based.
And for the brush itself, for our applications, you want a 2-3 inch angled sash brush. The angle lets you cut clean lines, and the size is manageable for lettering or marking while still covering enough area for larger surfaces.
What about spray equipment?
For the ultimate finish on large surfaces, an HVLP sprayer, high volume, low pressure, gives you a factory smooth result. The Fuji Semi Pro 2 is a popular entry-level system. But it's a significant investment, requires thinning the paint properly, and demands thorough cleanup. For most people, marking storage bins and sheds, aerosol spray cans in the Rust-Oleum Professional line are more practical. You get a good finish without the setup and cleanup of a spray system.
Let's talk about thinning. When do you need to thin paint, and with what?
Paint straight from the can is usually formulated to be brushable, but sometimes it's too thick. Especially if the can has been open for a while or if you're working in hot conditions where the paint skins over quickly. For water-based paints, you thin with water, but there's a better option, Floetrol. It's a latex paint conditioner made by Flood. It improves flow and leveling, reduces brush marks, and extends the open time, meaning the paint stays wet longer, which gives you more time to work it smooth.
For oil-based?
Mineral spirits for thinning. Penetrol for conditioning. Penetrol is the oil-based equivalent of Floetrol. It improves flow, reduces brush drag, and helps the paint self-level. Never thin more than 10% by volume unless the manufacturer's data sheet specifically says otherwise. Overthinning reduces film thickness and durability.
So for a quart, that's about 3 ounces, roughly.
And I want to mention something about cleanup, because this is where people ruin good brushes. For water-based paints, clean immediately after use with warm soapy water. Work the soap into the bristles with your fingers, rinse, repeat until the water runs clear. use a brush comb to get paint out of the ferrule. That's the metal band where the bristles meet the handle. Paint trapped in the ferrule will harden and splay the bristles permanently.
The ferrule is where brushes go to die.
It really is. For oil-based paints, you need mineral spirits or paint thinner for the initial cleaning. Swirl the brush in a container of solvent, work it through the bristles, then wash with soapy water to remove the solvent residue. Store brushes hanging or lying flat, never standing on the bristles. A brush keeper. Those metal or plastic containers with a clamp that holds the brush suspended in solvent vapor will keep a brush usable for weeks between sessions. Foam rollers, as I said, are disposable. Fabric rollers can be cleaned. A roller spinner tool, which is basically a centrifugal spinner you attach to a drill or use manually, flings the water and paint out after washing. It's satisfying in a messy way.
Let me try to synthesize the toolkit. For a typical project, marking a 50-gallon storage bin or a metal shed, you want a 4-inch foam roller for the main area, a 2-inch angled synthetic brush for details and edges, Floetrol if you're using water-based paint, or Penetrol for oil-based, mineral spirits for oil-based cleanup, a brush comb, and TSP substitute or crude cutter for surface prep. Sandpaper in 2, 20 grit, and maybe 80 grit for metal. Painter's tape for masking.
That's the kit. And I'd add a tack cloth. It's a sticky cheesecloth that picks up dust after sanding. A couple of dollars at any hardware store, and it makes a noticeable difference in the final finish.
Let me give you a case study that pulls this all together. You've got a rusty metal shed in the backyard. You want to paint a large section of it. Maybe a mural, maybe just solid color with lettering. Step 1. Wire brush to remove loose rust. Step 2. Sand with 80 grit to smooth the surface. Step 3. Clean with TSP substitute and let dry. Step 4. Apply rust, oleum rusty metal primer, 1 coat, let it cure overnight. Step 5. 2 coats of rust. Oleum professional alkyd enamel in your chosen color, applied with a 4-inch foam roller, with Penetrol added at about 5% to improve leveling. Step 6. For lettering, switch to one-shot lettering. Enamel and a good quality lettering brush, a MAC or a Langnickel series 1180 if you can find one, and do your lettering over the cured base coat.
That's a professional grade process. With that sequence, you're looking at 5 to 7 years before you need to think about repainting, maybe longer if the shed is shaded.
The alternative, spray paint straight onto the rusty metal. Looks terrible in 6 months and fails completely in 2 years.
Which we've all seen. The shed that looks like it has a skin condition.
Let's distill all of this into a practical checklist you can use this weekend.
Actionable insight number 1. For large-scale marking, skip paint markers entirely. They're the wrong tool for surfaces bigger than a few inches. Go straight to a quart of rust, oleum professional high-performance enamel, the alkyd version, and a 4-inch foam roller. This combination gives you the best balance of durability, ease of use, and cost. You're looking at about $20 total for paint and roller, and the result will outlast any paint marker by a factor of 10.
That alkyd is the sweet spot. Not as expensive or specialized as one-shot. Not as limited as craft acrylic. It's the Toyota Camry of durable paints.
It really is. Actionable insight number 2. Find your local Sherwin-Williams or Benjamin Moore store. Say the words industrial enamel for outdoor marking. Watch the staff person's face shift from retail politeness to actual interest. These people spend their days tinting living room colors. You're offering them a real coatings problem. They will help you.
If you want to go deeper, look up your nearest sign supply house, Nasdar Source 1, Grimco, or a local screen printing supplier. These are the places where professional sign painters have been buying OneShot and Ronin for decades. They're not retail storefronts in the traditional sense. You may need to call ahead, but they will sell to anyone who knows what they want.
Actionable insight number 3. Surface prep is 80% of the job. For outdoor surfaces, use TSP substitute or crude cooter, not just isopropyl alcohol. For plastic, always sand first. 220 grit, light pressure, just enough to scuff the surface. For metal, always prime, and if there's rust, use a rust-inhibiting primer specifically. These steps take 15 minutes, and they're the difference between a 5-year paint job and a 6-month failure.
I'd add if you're painting polyethylene or polypropylene, those waxy-feeling plastics that nothing sticks to, get a can of Bulldog Adhesion Promoter. It's $10 and it solves the fundamental problem of paint not wanting to bond to low-energy surfaces.
Actionable insight number 4. Invest in good brushes and clean them properly. A $15 Purdy or Worcester brush, properly maintained, will last 5 years or more. 5 $3 brushes that shed bristles and lose their shape after 2 uses will cost you more and give you worse results. Clean water-based paints with warm soapy water and a brush comb. Clean oil-based paints with mineral spirits, then soapy water. Never let paint dry in the ferrule. Store brushes hanging or in a brush keeper.
There's a frugality paradox here. People buy cheap brushes because they don't want to spend $15. Then they ruin them because they don't clean them properly. Then they buy more cheap brushes. The expensive brush is actually cheaper.
The Sam Bimes theory of paintbrush economics.
And the final actionable piece. This week, identify one large surface you've been meaning to mark. A storage bin, a garage wall, a shed, a piece of equipment. Go to a dedicated paint store, not a big box, not a craft store. Buy the right paint and primer. Spend the 15 minutes on surface prep. Do it properly. You will never go back to paint markers for large surfaces.
The satisfaction to effort ratio on this is genuinely high. It's a weekend morning project that pays off every time you look at that surface for the next 5 years.
Where does this leave us? And what does the future hold for paint-based marking?
The regulatory trend is clear. VOC limits are tightening. California's South Coast Air Quality Management District continues to push for lower solvent content. The industry is responding with water-based urethanes and two-part epoxy systems that approach or match traditional alkyd performance. Sherwin-Williams and Benjamin Moore both have water-based alkyd emulsions now. They behave like oil paint but clean up with water. The technology is improving fast.
The gap is closing.
For indoor and moderate exposure applications, water-based has essentially caught up. For extreme durability on outdoor metal, solvent-based alkyds still have an edge, but that edge is narrowing every year. The open question is whether traditional oil-based enamels like OneShot will survive in their current form, or whether they'll be reformulated or replaced entirely.
Then there's the wild card. UV curable inks and direct-to-substrate printing. If you can print directly onto a metal panel with a UV-cured ink that bonds permanently, do you even need paint for marking?
For industrial applications, that's already happening. Flatbed UV printers can print directly onto metal, plastic, wood, glass. The ink cures instantly under UV light, no solvents, no drying time, extremely durable. But the equipment costs tens of thousands of dollars. For the person marking storage bins in their garage, a brush and a can of enamel remain the most accessible and durable solution.
There's something satisfying about the brush. The direct-to-substrate printer doesn't give you the same connection to the work.
That's the sign painter's argument, and I think it's valid. There's a craft dimension here that goes beyond pure utility. The reason OneShot still exists, the reason people still learn brush lettering, is that the result has a human quality that a printer can't replicate.
It's the difference between a handwritten label and a printed one. Both convey information. One conveys care.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1950s, scientists surveying the deep-sea hydrothermal vents off the coast of Patagonia discovered entire ecosystems thriving in total darkness. Powered not by sunlight, but by chemosynthetic bacteria that convert toxic vent chemicals into energy, a finding that accidentally launched the entire field of astrobiology, since it proved life doesn't need a sun.
The search for alien life began because someone pointed a camera at a bunch of hot underwater chimneys and found shrimp. This has been my Weird Props. If you enjoyed this deep dive into practical marking, check out our episode on industrial paint markers for smaller scale applications. And if you have a weird prompt of your own, send it to prompts@myweirdprompts.com. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.